Hi guys, welcome to the Dark Web Vlogs podcast. Thank you for stopping by and thank you for listening. This is the full episode about my team member Jagger, how I met him, and our adventure in the Australian outback. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome to the Dark Web Vlogs, where I'm sharing the experiences I've had working with clients on some of the most outrageous deals being run over the dark web. The job I'll be talking about today wasn't really a job, it was more of a find. On the hunt for a criminal who was on their own mission in the Australian outback, we found something much bigger, and I found someone who would prove a gem on a team I didn't even really have yet. Jagger, who is from Australia, proved himself to be a man who sticks to his goals, is loyal to who and what he believes in, and is someone who will do anything it takes to stick to his goals and what he's committed to. On an adventure that was not planned, I find myself in the middle of nowhere, in a situation I never could have seen coming. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. I've worked a lot of jobs, and today is my account of how even when you don't expect it, sometimes there's something big and great just around the corner. Take a listen and enjoy. Okay, so this Friday episode, as I mentioned in the preview, is focused on Jagger. There was a job of sorts, and really it was Jagger's job, and that's what this whole thing revolves around. I was in Australia with Scarlett, and I'd like to think it was fate that brought us all together. Jagger's a big part of what we are as a team today, and it all started there, in Australia. And why was I in Australia? Well, I was tracking down a rare piece of art, and tracking it on its journey from South Africa to Australia. That job is a whole different story, but basically this piece of art had major religious significance for one unique group. Those stealing this piece of art wanted to use it, of course, for sour things, and it had to be returned and put under lock and key for safekeeping and to avoid anyone else gaining possession of this and utilizing its powers irresponsibly. I'd basically taken care of this job, and I found myself in Adelaide, Australia. I'm closing things out, and when we're done, Scarlett and I decided to stick around for a bit and take a small break. I don't get to Australia very often, and when I get to a place like this, sometimes it's just nice to stick around for more than just a job. And Scarlett and I had just got done with a 3-job run anyway, so it was time for a break. And what a better place than Australia? Love it there. We hadn't really thought about what we wanted to do yet, but it was definitely time for some fun. But there was something else going on also. There was something else on our mind. While we were dealing with our own business, it seemed that we were actually witness to some kind of other crime going on. What we saw left us with that feeling, you know, and we just couldn't shake it. There was another container on the ocean freight we'd been tracking, and it had a very suspicious group attached to it. When all of our stuff was done, we decided that we would go back to the port to see if there was anything going on. And by the time we got back there, it was around 11 p.m. And we figured we wouldn't find anything, but at least then we'd know, we checked it out, and we could move on. And as we half expected, no one else was around. It was just us. But we sat there, we even dozed off for a few. But not too long after we woke up again, people started to show up. There were 5 gentlemen that met up with some other guy that seemed to be someone from the cargo ship. It really did seem like something shady was going on. We moved in a little bit closer and we saw them unloading wooden crate after wooden crate, 6 total. They were marked as if they were fruit, but let's get serious. You know, you could tell they obviously were not unloading fruit right then. Something was going on. So now we're just sitting there watching these crates then get loaded into the back of this pickup truck. And they are covering it up with some kind of cloth. It actually looks like green military tent vinyl, really. I guess that's the best way I can describe it. And while that's going on, we noticed something else. Across the way, we noticed movement. And now our curiosity is really piqued. Scarlett and I move in closer now, and we see that it's a man. That's the movement that we saw. He's dressed all in black, and I mean, if we didn't notice him right when we did, we never would have seen him. He moved very slowly, he stayed in the shadows, and now not only do we want to know what's up with these crates, we want to know what's up with this guy, this man in black. You know, we're curious people, we can't help ourselves. So we stick around. It's about 5:30 in the morning when the pickup truck is finally loaded, covered. The group of guys have a chat, and then three of them get in the cab of the truck. Two of them hop in the back with the merchandise, and the freight contact disappears back into the darkness. And so we're also watching this man in black, and everyone pulls out, so we follow. And to our surprise, these guys pull into a cafe. They park, and they all go inside. So now we're thinking that, you know, yeah, maybe this really is nothing. But we decided that we would put a tracker on this truck, just because. I mean, if it goes somewhere interesting, we're going to follow it. While these guys get settled in the cafe, Scarlett and I go and gather up our supplies from our hotel and gas up. This could be nothing, but you know, we just can't help ourselves. The tracker's on the truck, we have our stuff, and now we're just sort of sitting around and waiting. Scarlett actually goes into the cafe to get us something to eat, and she checks these men out. They look a little bit rough. At a closer look, they almost seem like they haven't slept. They're all talking, but very low. She has no idea what they're saying, and that's about all that she gets. She comes back out with the food, and we just sit in the car and fuel up. We wait, and then eventually these guys are ready to leave, and they head out, and they head over to this hotel, and this guy comes out with them, and he's loaded down with laptop bags. He gets into this car, and then both vehicles take off, and we don't follow them right away. We don't have to. You know, we just sit there, and we watch them on our tracker just to see where they're going. So as you can see, you know, now these guys have our attention. We have fruit boxes, this group of odd guys, and laptops, and this other guy. Scarlett and I have no idea what it all is, but we're just fine. You know, it's not a job. This is not a request. We're just entertaining ourselves, really. Well, as we watch, our entertainment leads us right out of town. These guys are heading out, and by out, I mean they're heading way out there. So basically, if you're unfamiliar with Australia, South Australia, where we are, is one of their states, and Adelaide is the capital of that, and that's where we are. The outback covers a lot of the state, and a lot of people, you know, think that the outback is an actual place, you know, with a perimeter, boundaries, and all of that, but it doesn't exactly cover a specific area per se. The term outback really refers to the very remote areas where it's uninhabited for the most part, not much there. And so, okay, now we have this truck guys heading out there with this car guy who's tagging along, fruit and computers heading into the outback to what? You know, have a snack and sightsee? I think not. And where did the guy in black go? We're wondering that because we haven't seen him since the port. Either way, Scarlett and I decide to go back to the gas station, purchase several gas cans because we don't know how far we're going to go, more food, some camping items. And while staying pretty far behind, we decide to follow these guys to see what they're up to. We have our tracker, which once locked in, doesn't need the internet. It's going to track them and stay connected, and it can do that at very far distances. So we're okay, at least for now. We drive quite a ways until our group of fruit travelers stop. It's late, and we decide that we're going to camp out for the evening. We're still far back from them, and we keep an eye on if they move at all. It's been a long day, and we need to eat, and we can still try to relax. And I don't know if you've ever been to the outback again or any area of it, but it's very interesting. It's an interesting place to be, especially if you're from the States, at least to me. You think there would be a lot of tourists or things like that, but there aren't any large parking lots. There are no souvenir shops. It's just really out there in the middle of nothing. At least, again, that's my experience. I'm sure you can find the tourist places if you want to. Clearly, the guys that we're following want nothing to do with any of that because they're heading very far out there where there isn't anything. I can't imagine what they'd be doing out there. And I want to know what's in those boxes. So we set up our camp and we settle in for the rest of the night. It's very open where we are. The sun's going down and there's this red glow that takes over the area. It's beautiful. It's peaceful. We will move if we have to, but we're kind of hoping that we can at least have some downtime. I set up my tracker so it will alert me if there's any more movement from our group. And in the meantime, we cook up some food, you know, review what happened on our last job, chat, things like that. We got there late, so we're up pretty late, and it's getting cooler out. It was about 75 degrees in the daytime, and it's about 45 degrees at night at this point. So we had a little fire going, which was good, and we're almost ready to shut it all down when we hear something. And we're thinking it must be some kind of animal or something because we've been sitting there for a few hours now. We can see where our guys are, and they're still a good distance from us. Start looking around with my flashlight to see if I can find anything, but there's nothing. So we brush it off. But then we hear it again. We both stand up now, and before I can even get my flashlight up, there's one shining on us. Of course, it's shining in our faces, so we can't see what's beyond it, but it's clearly a person or persons. I call out and ask, "Who's there?" But they don't answer, not right away. Scarlett then calls out and asks them to show themselves and asks them what they want. It's quiet for a moment, but then that flashlight is lowered and we see someone walking toward us. Scarlett doesn't have a weapon on her. All I have is a taser on my belt, and I'm about to grab it when I heard the person tell me to forget about that idea, and that surprises me. It's a man. I'm not sure if anyone else is with him at this point, but then he stepped out into light, and we're going by firelight at this point, but we can see that it's that man in black. He's got a backpack on, and I can see he has some items of his own on his belt. His face is covered, and all I can see is some light brown or maybe dark blonde hair sticking out of his cap. He asks us what we're doing. Now, usually, I'd have an answer for that. I'm on a job. I'm heading somewhere. I usually know what the heck I'm doing. But this time, we really didn't know what we were doing. I'm following complete strangers and camping in the outback on what, a hunch? Well, that's actually exactly what we're doing, but I don't really want to tell him that. I tell him that we're camping. But he doesn't take to that answer very well. He tells me that he's been following us and that he knows we're not just camping. Now, I'm not one to fold under pressure, and I have no idea who this person is, but I do know that he has been on the same guys that we've latched onto. He has to know more about what's going on than I do. So I want to know what it is, and I'm blunt as usual, and I tell him that what I'm doing there is none of his business. I start with that. And, you know, I'm not in the best situation here. Certainly not a situation I prefer. This guy has an advantage over me at the moment. He's been following us, and I know nothing about him. I asked him who he is, and all he does is ask who I am. I tell him that I'm nobody. I'm a tourist from the United States. And then he says that we both know that's not true. Now this gets to me because for some reason it seems he does know more about me than he should. It's a very odd scene, and I wish I could actually just play it out for you guys because it's kind of hard to explain this kind of thing, but we're all standing there and we're looking at each other and he does look at Scarlett, but he's really focused on me. He starts giving up a little bit about what he knows. He tells me that he noticed me at the port. He knows that we saw him. He tells me that he's working a job and he wants to know why I'm getting in his way. And then he says, or asks rather, that don't I only work cases by request? And then he steps in closer and he's looking at us both. And then he removes his face covering. And we're standing there. And I just know that he's doing this for a reason. He knows something. And I'm thinking this is a test. You know, am I supposed to know who he is? So he's showing us his face and he's just standing there. He doesn't do anything but look at us. I know he wants to know if I know who he is. He's just staring at me. I start to walk around him a little bit, kind of going back and forth, and I'm looking at him, and then something is familiar, but I'm not sure exactly what yet. I look over to Scarlett, and I can tell that she sees it too. Who is this guy? I start to remember a couple of things, and a story comes to mind, and I'm wondering, is this that guy? It's a story that I heard of in my circles of the Aussie Auntie, and I know that means nothing to you because none of this was put out there. It was just a way for those in the know, especially in the US anyway, to refer to this one Australian guy without saying who he was, to keep his name private. And that was really out of respect for him because he deserved and preferred to be private. And everyone that knew what was right knew that. But his story became sort of well known among these people that were behind the scenes hunting down crime. The story says that there is this guy whose sister got shot, and who went out on his own. He was a part of the AFP, but then he left all that to catch this killer and catch bad guys. He had quite the reputation at this point. I mean, if you were a bad guy and the authorities didn't get you, this guy would. He wanted to be out there on his own, acting as a vigilante of sorts and taking down bad guys that were up to no good. As far as the AFP went, they obviously knew who he was. He used to work with them, and he turned out to be a great source of information for them. He could track anyone. His reputation was that you could not hide from him, so no matter who you were or where you went, he would find you. So this guy sees that some kind of light bulb just went off in my head, and he sort of cocks his head a bit. You know, I know it's my turn to speak, so I just say it. I ask it. You are the Aussie auntie, aren't you? And he says, good for you, ghost. Yes, I am. So he definitely knows me. He knows all about the happenings in the States. And so now I know that he's familiar with that term, the Aussie auntie as well. And at first, for a couple of seconds, I was kind of thrown back that he knew who I was. But then again, if he is who I thought he was and he had worked for the AFP, it shouldn't be a surprise that he knows who I am. I've done work in Australia before, so people that should and would know who I am do. And that's okay, because like I said, in these types of groups and with people like this, they know and understand that anonymity is crucial. And we're all out for really the same kind of goal in some form or another. But now, just because we know each other and who each other is, can we trust each other? We're all there together, so what do we do now? I know who he is, and I know he knows who I am. So I give a little, I tell him that we're actually here finishing up a case, and we were gonna take a few days off, but we noticed something at the port. There's something going on, and I'm just honest. I couldn't help myself, and I wanted to find out what it was. And he's right, just so you know. I normally do not take on anything that's not a request, that doesn't come to me in the right way. But sometimes things do fall in your lap, and it's happened before, and it's happening now. At this point, I still don't know if it's anything worth following. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know who they are. But it doesn't take long for the Aussie auntie to give me the information. He tells me that he's following the man who killed his sister, someone that I know he's already caught, but he tells me that this man had escaped. He stopped all work on anything else because this time he wants to find him and take him down as quickly as possible. This is a surprise to both Scarlett and me. It's not like I get reports on the man. I didn't know there was an escape. I ask him if he knows what's in the fruit boxes. He says he does not. I ask him if he knows why they have multiple laptops they're taking with them, and he does not. Well, I explained to him that I just decided to track these guys and see what was going on, and that's when I learned more about this man in black's tracking skills. He flat out says that I don't need my tracker, that he plans on heading out to where they are in the morning. We go over a few more things and learn about each other as we go. Now, I haven't been at this all that long. I have Scarlett with me, and that's it. But we've taken on some interesting cases so far, so I share those with him. We're building trust the more that we share with each other. And as I talk, I realize what an asset he is. Everyone knows this man's loyalty to Australia, though. So I sort of leave it alone for the time being, although I'm really thinking that I would love to have a guy like this on my team. But I'll need to get to know him a little bit better. And if we end up traveling with him, I'll know if he'd actually be a good fit and if he'd even possibly want to join my mission. We found out his real name, and he confirms that yes, his sister was shot, and it's that man that he's hunting. He'd escaped and needs to be put away again for good. He shows us a picture that he carries with him everywhere he goes, and that's something that he still does to this day. That's just something else that you didn't know about Jagger. It motivates him. It keeps him moving every single day. And it gives him that zest for life that we see in him, whether on a job, at the warehouse, on vacation, wherever we are. Life is a gift, he always says. He said it that first day, and he still says it now. We find out that his parents are no longer alive, and that's a story I'm not going to share here because that is private to him. But basically, at that point, he was a lone ranger. His sister was his only sibling. His only purpose at this point is to catch bad guys, and right now it's the one. He's very interested in what I do, though, as well. When I tell him about the cases I've worked so far and the requests that I've seen come in, even since I've gotten to Australia on that trip, he seems very interested, and I note that to myself. I also note that although he's an extremely interesting person, there's something about him. Not exactly a loneliness, but maybe it's just that he's worked alone for so long. The guy looks like he's had a lot of adventure that he has behind him, that he still has a lot in him. And I can tell that right away. He's been tracking bad guys in Australia for a while now. After we kind of get through this can we trust each other thing, we actually end up enjoying ourselves. We all stay up pretty late talking about who we are and what we've done, where we've come from, and just what's going on, what we like to do, what we don't like to do, things like that. Scarlett has a lot to say on her background too in history and, you know, all the stuff that she's done with archaeology. I mean, it's fun and it was great to listen about who Jagger is and what he's all about, but it was also fun to hear about Scarlett talk about herself and sort of re-explore who she is. I have two great people with me on this night in the Outback, and I just take it all in. We finally do crash. An early morning comes in what seems like minutes. Our adrenaline is running right away because we really want to know what's going on. We feel like we slept all night. We're energized. We're ready to go. I had rented an SUV for our trip, and Jagger's in a truck, and we decide that we'll all go together in the SUV. So he moves everything that he's brought to our truck, and then we go. He drives, stopping often to check things out, and I let him track these guys his way, but secretly I'm also using my tracker, and this guy's right on the money. It was very cool watching how he looked for tire tracks, and he could figure out where they stopped even, and things like that. It's an art form. I'd never met anyone as good at it as he is before. Okay, and now I won't bore you with the entire trip through the Outback because it took a while, but we do get to our destination, but when we get there, it really doesn't look like anything. We all get out, we start walking around, and we know these guys are there. We even find their truck and car pathetically hidden, and that's where we park. But where are our guys? And you know me, anything's possible. I mean, you know, I'm thinking maybe they got beamed up somewhere, and I'm serious, you know, anything is possible. So all options are on the table for me at this point. But then Jagger, who's off to the side, points down. He doesn't say anything, he just points down, and then he's kneeling down to the ground, just looking at a bunch of stuff and listening, and then he finds it. Behind these rocks, there's this metal door. It's in the ground and it's covered in dirt and things and dust. I mean, if you were just driving by or even hiking around that area, which I'm not sure why you would be in this particular spot, you would never see it. We all know at that point that we're going to have to go down there if we want to know what's actually going on. And Jagger explains that he's going down no matter what because he came for something and he's not leaving without it. I know there's something going on and it's something shady. And I just tell Jagger that he can lead the way, but we're going in also, and that we've got his back. Before we do anything, we drive our SUV farther out, quite a ways beyond this whole situation, and then we hike back. We don't want anyone to see us or have any hint that we were there. Unless you're a tracker like Jagger, you would have no idea. From the looks of these guys, I doubt they're professional trackers of any kind. And this next part isn't all that fun. We actually have to bring our supplies, you know, we have backpacks, and we just lay on the ground in the dust behind some bushes and we wait. And this is where I learn about how much Jagger is not into stakeouts, but he knows we have to do it. Anyway, we wait to see if anyone comes out. We wait to see if anyone else arrives and goes in, and we wait until it's dark. During that whole time, nothing happens. Looks like our port travels are in for the night. It's about 10:30 at this point. It's time for us to make our move. The door to the underground isn't locked or anything, and really, think about it. Would it need to be? We're seriously in the middle of nowhere. Jagger leans down on the ground and listens some more. He listens at the door, and Scarlett and I are on the ground with him, but we're off to the side. He backs away and then puts his ear back down to the metal door, listens one more time, and then he's ready. We all sort of hold our breath as he slowly pulls the door up and open. And just so you know, there are two things happening, two things that we're thinking. One is that we all realize there could be people waiting right inside that door. But on the other hand, we all know without saying it, and what we're counting on is that there won't be. And that would actually be the smart thing to do. You don't want someone coming down like that and dropping in on you. You'd want to be in a position to be able to move in yourself on an intruder. That is, if they hear someone. But Jagger moves so slow, there was no way anyone would hear him coming. And we follow his lead, and it takes a while, but soon enough, we're in. He only opened the door enough so that we could all slide in and make our way down the ladder. And so that's exactly what we do. And then Jagger slowly closes the door behind him, making zero sound. It's pretty dark in there, but down a ways there are people and there's light. And that's enough light that we can follow the walls. This bunker is extremely old. It's made of metal. There are different pipes and things sticking up, old wiring that must have been used for some type of communication back in the day. There's an old metal stove. Everything's cut off now, of course. old and rusting and things like that. I mean, it was definitely an active bunker at some point. Okay, so anyway, there's a straight hallway with little rooms off to the side. We take an inventory of what is all available to us space-wise. So if we need to duck in somewhere, we could do it quickly. To get in close where these guys are, we have no choice but to get down on the floor and slither our way towards the entrance. Jagger's on one side of the doorway to this room everyone's in, and Scarlett and I are off to the other side. I'm closest to the entrance, and Scarlett's just a ways back. We peer into this room, and we see a lot more than expected. The crates are there. They're all laying by the entrance and off to the side a bit. They're all opened. They are filled with some sort of straw, but that's all we can see. They've been thrown there from what we can tell, and whatever was in there is gone now. We look in the room, and we see we've got at least 12 men. They all have the same slightly dirty and disheveled look to them. There's a large table in the middle of this room. On one end of the table, we see a few guns. That's the end closest to us. And then I also notice that to the side of the table, there are more guns. They're all lined up and leaning against the wall. It's easy to see. They are assault rifles. Okay, so we're all looking around and we've seen the rifles. And then I notice the computers. And there's some kind of large printer towards the back. And those laptops, they're all opened up and lined up on the table with someone sitting at each one of them. Our view is straight at the table. We had to raise ourselves a bit to see what was all going on. We can only go up so far so that we're not noticed. And lucky for us, this room is pretty big. That table's not right next to the entrance, and all those crates are there. So those actually help camouflage us a bit in the darkness. But we're all looking around, and then we freeze. We freeze because we hear the entrance door opening. And we can't move very fast because the guys in the room will notice that. So we slither back slowly, but quickly, if that makes sense, and we retreat into one of those side rooms. There are two men that come down through that entrance. And these guys are different. They're not all dirty or disheveled. To the contrary, these guys are in suits, nice ones. They're clean cut, their hair's slicked back, shiny shoes and all. So we're all thinking, what is this? Jagger's very curious as well, but you can also see he's jonesing to get his one guy. So these new guys to him are just in his way. But the good thing is when these guys show up, we get the rest of the story. We know immediately that they are the ones running this little crew in this bunker. They ask when their shipment will be ready, and they basically give these guys a deadline of 7 days to complete whatever it is they're doing, which we very quickly learn what it is they are doing as they continue to talk. They are smuggling guns, and not only are they smuggling guns, so, you know, the assault rifles that were in the fruit boxes and that are against the wall, they're also printing guns, untraceable handguns, which, as you probably already know, guns and regular hands have been illegal in Australia since the Port Arthur massacre. If you don't know what that is, it was in April of 1996, and a 28-year-old man with a semi-automatic rifle went around to more than one location around Port Arthur, which is in Tasmania, Australia, shooting people. Now, this guy survived, but he shot and killed 35 people. And then there was somewhere around 20 that were also wounded. Well, he got a life sentence for each one of those murders. No chance of parole. But 1 year after that happened, the buyback program started. Now, unless you have a verifiable reason, a good one, you will not be given a license to own a gun, even if you feel like you need it for self-defense. What these guys are doing is putting guns back on the streets and in the hands of people, and probably people that are out for no good, right? These guns are to be sold on the black market. Some, we learn, are to be dispersed within Australia, while others will go on to be sold again elsewhere for profit. These guys are in the manufacturing and smuggling business of guns. The suits are talking, intimidating the guys, inspecting what's going on. They make it clear that they are in charge. They bark out that they don't want any more plastic guns produced. Apparently, there were too many issues with them. They get too hot. The guns they're making here in this bunker are all made of stainless steel, or at least they're 90% stainless steel. And remember, these are printed. They will not have serial numbers, they're non-traceable, and they are extremely illegal. And this has been done before, mind you. This is not something new to the world. The first printed gun, actually, if you didn't know, was in Texas. Plastic one at first, then 6 months later, there was a metal one printed, and it worked. And I mean, this is a very detailed process. You need to make sure the filament runs correctly and there's enough of it. You need to make sure your print platform is level. But these guys, they really seem to have perfected what they are doing. So again, the suits don't want mistakes. This delivery has to be perfect. Apparently, their last batch produced great guns, so they're expecting the same quality this time and nothing less. And that's what's going on. And then here we are, you know, Scarlett and I, our curiosity got us started. Then we tagged along with Jagger to find and retrieve one man. But what we've uncovered here is something big. And it needs to be shut down before these guns are complete, and definitely before they leave this bunker. Jagger has spotted his target. He points him out to us. He's messy brown hair, he's in a plaid shirt, dirty jeans, and he's sitting at the far end of the table. Jagger knows that he will have to wait, though. We just can't barge in on this crew as we are and take this one man. There's too many of them. There are guns everywhere, and these guys are desperate to finish their batch and make their delivery. So there we all are. But we need to make a plan. We can't really just sit there in the middle of this bunker either and figure it out, so we need to get out of there. Looks like the suits are going to be in and out pretty quick. They're in to check their business, and that's it. And sure enough, within a few minutes, they bark out a few more orders, but then they exit. We hear some kind of vehicle start up just beyond the door. And in the meantime, the guys on the inside in the gun room, they're all talking loudly, you know, over what just happened. So we're hoping the suits actually left, because now is the perfect time for us to leave with those guys distracted like that. So while this crew is trying to figure out how to reach their deadline and keep their printing and assembly perfect, we sneak up the ladder and out the door. We didn't know what to expect when we got into that bunker, but we definitely got more than we would have thought. The fresh air felt really good once we got outside of there after all the pressure of what was going on inside. The suits have left, and we just start hiking back to our SUV. And I can just see the wheels turning in Jagger's head. There's a bit of frustration because he came for something, and he isn't leaving with it, which doesn't appear to be something that happens to him very often. Aside from that, we need to figure out what to do. Nobody really says anything until we're in the SUV, and I get in the driver's seat, and Scarlett brings up the point, you know, that we need to get a hold of the authorities. Seems to make sense. Jagger's not settled with that idea, not all the way. I mean, he is, but he says that calling in the authorities is fine. But he wants to get his man. Theo is his, Theodore Carlton, and he wants to go in and get him and bring him out and turn him in himself. And I get it. You want what you want, and you want what you came for. But the situation here is very big, and I'm not exactly sure how we would pull that off. But I also know there's always a way to get done whatever you want to get done. We head out far enough to where we can set up camp again, try to think about all of this. We know we have some time because obviously we heard their deadline is 7 days, and from what it looked like, they had a long ways to go. I will say, however, that these guys did appear to have quite the operation. In that large room, everyone had a role. And that was clear, but then Jagger helped put some of it together for us, as he's seen this type of thing before. He explained to us that in these groups like this, the ones he's seen, there were runners. And the runners would be the ones that go into town or wherever they need to go to get product. But like in the mafia maybe, or something that we can relate to a little bit better, there are levels to what people do in groups like this. So along with the runners, there were also fellows. And the guys that were called fellows would also go into town and run different errands, but their errands were a little different. They were more into stuff that had to do with business. And so in this case, they would go into town, these guys, to download the gun blueprints and things like that, that they need to print these things, get food and other supplies. The fellows in this group would have been guys who were in the car that the truck met up with, the ones with the laptops. Obviously, they don't have internet out there, so they need the plans. Okay, well, it's the middle of the night now. There's not much to do. Although Jagger's chomping at the bit, but we didn't get much sleep the night before, so we give into it and we make ourselves get some shut-eye. It's a little hard at first, but then we're all pretty much knocked out. And like the last time, we woke up in what felt like mere minutes. But this time we actually did get a solid 6 hours at least. It was about 8 or 8:30, something like that, when we woke up, and I was the first one out. Sun was up already, but it was still morning. You know, it seems extra quiet in the morning. I enjoyed the peace and quiet, you know, while I watched some of the fun outback spider life and some other small creatures make their way into the new day. The Outback to me is a lot of wonderful while also a little bit eerie. You really feel small in this place. You are not by anyone, and I really can't imagine any tourists coming out to this particular area for a great time, but hey, you never know. There was no one there at that time. Jagger's up next, not that long after I was actually, and before Scarlett comes out, we have a chat. We meet eye to eye on the fact that I realize and know that he needs this. He has to get Theo. He also knows that I can't let this pass, not that he would let it pass either. We obviously need to call on the authorities to get this whole operation. We uncovered a major crime. This would not be a typical job for me, and that group of men inside that bunker isn't a typical Jagger shakedown either. We agree on all of that without saying much. And he knows the guys at the AFP, and that's where we will go. We need to bring them up to speed so they can organize what they need to do, but Jagger's catch is this, his terms, if you will. He wants what he came for. He still plans on getting it. And I do understand, again, where he's coming from. Well, Scarlett's up soon after Jagger and I's little chat, and we all head straight back into town. The AFP has worked to enhance their capabilities to fight illicit gun crime, and I'm hoping they're ready for this one. The guys we saw were busy working for sure, but we didn't study them enough to know their defense protocol. What is it? I mean, they could be set up to just blow up the place should they face intruders like this. We really just don't know. We get back into Adelaide, where Jagger knows exactly where to go. We get to the AFP office, and really, Scarlett and I follow his lead and just try to stay out of the way. And Jagger is smooth, I have to say. He relayed to them what we found. He introduced me and Scarlett, and in a very calm way explained to them what it all was. The smooth part of it all was how he handled his segue into what I think they probably already knew, knowing who he is. I mean, everyone there knew that what Jagger had been doing, you know, tracking this guy, he was on the hunt. They knew that he was in the Outback. He never misses a target, so no matter what he found, surely he found what he was looking for in it all. Sure, they knew that. And he gets to that. To get to the details of what we're going to do, we all move into and convene in this larger conference type room with more of their guys. The end result of all of that is that there will be a raid. They're going to raid the place. This all makes sense, but there's Jagger and his mission. Says he found the place and he's going in first, no matter defenses and things. He wants to go in quick, grab Theo, and bring him out himself. Now, Scarlett and I are just sitting there listening to all of this, and all we can think about is that room and all those guns, all those men who look half mad, working in a hurry. They've been threatened pretty much by the suits, and they're not just going to let him walk in there. Didn't seem too likely anyway, but Jagger says that's what he's going to do. So I just sit back, and I'm looking at him, and really, at that time, at that moment, all I see, honestly, is determination. There's no hesitation, no fear, zero doubt. A little different with just three of us out there, but now, with the AFP coming, standing by and ready to go in, he feels fine about all of it. Should anything go wrong or get iffy, they'll just charge the place. He feels totally safe with that, and he wants his chance. He tells them that that's the deal. They say yes, and he'll lead them right to the gunman. Jagger wants to get all the guys, you know, believe me, but this is just how he works with his AFP guys. They agree, of course, and we all get ready to head back out there. And in our planning, what I did not expect is involvement. Involvement by me and Scarlett. Jagger asks, but is really hoping and expecting us to say yes, but he would like us to be a distraction. And I'll admit, gets my adrenaline going. To me, sure. This isn't even my kind of job. This is actually kind of a treat for Scarlett and I. I mean, I'd love to be involved, and Scarlett's right there with me. I mean, we don't really exactly fight crime. We go in and do the odd jobs, the outrageous, crazy stuff. So we're all in, and the plan would be that we go in as desperate and lost people, playing confused and needing help, and then being forever grateful for their assistance. Sounds easy enough. So as soon as the AFP guys are ready, we caravan back out there. Again, we all park far enough away. Not as far as we did the last time, but far enough so that they don't hear us coming. And then the takedown begins. The AFP guys spread out and get into position as Scarlett and I move in and start banging on that metal door. All the guys, that have surrounded the place are all on the ground. And there are enough random little bushes and brush around that even though they're not totally hidden, these guys don't stand out either. When the gunmen open their door, they'll just be focused on us. And they are. And I start acting like I need water. And Scarlett plays the hysterical one. Two guys come up and I'm pretty much falling down. So they're looking at me, but then they head right over to Scarlett to try to calm her down and figure out what's going on there. I'm calling out that we've been lost out there for 2 days. And they actually seemed genuinely concerned. Another guy pops up and starts dealing with me. And then a couple more guys are about to come up, but the three that are already up there, they hold them back. I'm now drinking water. Scarlett's faking tears all over the place. And these guys are just totally confused. But it's just the three of them and us. To our group, you know, that's three of them that are out of the way. The AFP rushes in, snatches these three guys right out of the situation. It happened really fast. It was really impressive, actually. Scarlett and I, you know, we keep talking as if we're still receiving help so that the guys on the inside don't realize what just happened. And that's when Jagger moves in. He looks out to the AFP guys and then he walks up to us, nods, takes a deep breath, and then down he goes. Nobody was down there but Jagger and the rest of these men. And from our count, you know, from what we got earlier, that would leave about 9 guys still in there and a bunch of guns. And then Jagger. Well, wasn't 4 minutes and Jagger was hoisting that messy haired plaid shirt guy right out of that bunker. It was Theo. He got him out. He didn't say a word. He just got him out and then took him straight to our SUV. The weird thing was that after he got him out, there was no noise coming from that bunker. You know, I peeked down there and there were guys gathering, you know, around the entrance. And, you know, they'd look up and they saw me. That's all they saw. And they were just confused. They had this look on their face. But I was shocked, really, that they weren't just pointing a gun at me. They had a million of them down there, it seemed. Well, long story short, Jagger had went down there, played a madman on a mission, which is actually kind of funny because if you knew Jagger, if you knew him, you know, the way I do, and this is why it helps that I explain these guys a little bit before I go into my first experience with them. I mean, with Jagger hearing all of this, you might think that he was a madman, but he wasn't, and he isn't, but he sure played it good. And I mean, he had a reputation. These guys had heard of him before and he caught them by surprise. I think they weren't sure what to do. With Theo out, there was no reason for the AFP to wait any longer. And those guys moved in and they moved in quick. They came in from all sides and one by one, they went down into that bunker. There were orders being called out, yelling, some shuffling. But then just as they went in, they came out. At first, one by one, each of them with a gunman in their arm. They moved them to their prisoner transport vehicle, loaded them in there, and then one by one, they started coming up with supplies. They'd come up, they'd go back down for more. All in all, they had 95 assault rifles, 6 boxes of printed, assembled, and complete steel handguns, and another 3 boxes of parts. There were 2 printers, not just one, and they brought up 8 large boxes that were filled with smaller boxes of ammunition. We didn't see those in our brief visit down there, but I mean, of course, it's not like you can just go buy what you need there in Australia like you can go buy in so many places like the US or somewhere. A gun with no ammunition is no good, right? Those went with the guns. What was crazy was when they had everything laid out on the ground above that bunker, how that all even fit down there, you wouldn't even believe unless you saw it all pulled out for yourself. I mean, we saw it happen and wow. It was crazy. There was a lot. And now it was all laid out in rows out there in the middle of nowhere. They laid it all out, organized it all, got pictures, and then loaded it all up into their trucks. The drive in both directions was long, right? But the deal itself went fast. And even though the amount of stuff was surprising, the most amazing part about all of it was Jagger, how he went in and got this guy, Theo. How he had tracked him in the first place. He now had him secured in our SUV, and even though there were AFP guys all over the place, Theo stayed with Jagger, and Jagger stayed with us all the way back. Jagger handed him off when we got there, and at that point, the entire situation was theirs to handle, the AFP. Scarlett and I had nothing to do with any of that, really, and Jagger got his man, so now it was done. Without saying much, we all left the AFP office, and Jagger came with us. Instead of going to Scarlett and I's original hotel, which we still had a room at, even though we weren't there, that was kind of our plan, Jagger asked if we could go to a park, Victoria Park. There was a good-sized area of really green grass, and we were all walking, and then he just went out onto the grass and plopped himself down. And it was at that time that he explained more about what his situation was. He grew up in Adelaide, like I said, the capital of South Australia, and grew up in and around one of the wineries there where his parents worked. He grew up with his sister, who I'm calling Megan. The two were very close. They spent a lot of time in the outdoors. You know, she was more of a dreamer, liked to hike and lay in the sun, where he found a different path. He discovered his love and knack for hunting things down. This only further developed into a career with the AFP, the Australian Federal Police, and they're a big deal. Now, they don't have the FBI like the United States, but I guess you could say that you could try to compare the two, even though that still isn't really fair. But anyway, he had a great career, and he was successful at it. And during that time, that's when his sister was killed. It was an armed robbery, the details of which are not important. The thief was armed with a knife. Guns had been outlawed, clearly, and there were two people during all of this that were directly in harm's way. Everyone else, for one reason or another, had been moved off to the side and out of the way. One of the two people still in the way, however, was Jagger's sister. Younger than Jagger, he was her older brother, protector. He always checked in on her, would pop in, and he kept a good eye on her and her activities and her life, tried to make sure she stayed on the right track, and she had, and everything was great, till that fateful day. During this incident, the guy he was hunting, Theo, was swinging a large kitchen carving knife as a threat to everyone. Got his sister, sliced her arm and her thigh. It was punishment for her trying to get out of the ropes she was tied in. This girl was a fighter. And then she finally did get free of those ropes, and her and one of the other hostages tried to make a run for it. But Theo didn't like that and surprised everyone by breaking out a gun. No one saw it before, but he broke it out and shot both of them. Megan fell down right then and there. He had hit her in the back, and the bullet went through her heart. There was no saving her. After all that happened, and what seemed to be warp speed, Jagger went from sad to focused. Theo ran as soon as he fired his shots. Megan died. Second victim lived, although she was in the ICU for quite a while. Anyway, it became Jagger's mission to track down this guy, put him where it belonged, pay for his crimes and the murder. As a member of the AFP, he wanted in on this one, and he did get it. And that's when he first went on the hunt for this guy. And that's when he made the decision to go out on his own. He eventually did get him. Took him a year, but that was almost by his own design. He knew exactly where he was, would force him out of hiding time and time again. He was tormenting the guy. He had him the whole time. But he didn't want to pick him up till he was ready. Jagger admitted, though, that now he was done with all of that. He got his man again. And this guy was in for good this time. Jagger had gotten lots of criminals who thought they could hide their way out of it. He also admitted that maybe there was something else out there. I mean, was Jagger really saying what I thought he was? He was giving me hints, testing the idea. I knew he wanted to know more about what I did and what I was planning on doing. In the end, we were all just a good fit. It was obvious. It made sense, and he was willing. Said he was ready to go beyond Australia and, in fact, wanted to. Said his sister would want him to use his skills in a more far-reaching way. Said he knew that, and he was ready. That was his way of asking if he could join Scarlett and I, go wherever we were going next. I'd already shared with him some of the requests that had come in while I was in Australia. There was definitely plenty to do. I looked him over one more time, and all I saw was a genuine, loyal, highly skilled individual that had much more to give to this world. I wanted him on my team. I thought it in the beginning when I met him, and I still did at that moment. And just like as anyone joined the team, that was that. We all moved forward, and he's been with me ever since. And as the other team members joined us as well, I've never regretted having Jagger join us. And he really does seem in his element. He's a go-getter. He knows what he's doing, and he brings an extra energy to the team that is unique. And I mean, as you know, we do very odd things. But he's been up for it since day one. I'm grateful that I ran into him that day in Australia. And so that was that. And I really can't say that this was my job doing such and such. Really, this was an adventure, not like any other, where we were able to stop something major from happening. And then something major happened to my group. It was growing. and growing in a most excellent way. This story is a little bit different than the ones I usually talk about, you know, the ones I tell you guys so often. And I really hope you enjoyed hearing about what happened on that trip in Australia and meeting Jagger, learning more about him and how he became part of my team. You know, I tell these stories, but with my time limits, I can't really go into what every team member is doing every minute of the job. So I like sharing these stories with you and sharing with you a little bit more about who they are, and they're happy about it too. We all definitely are together on all of this stuff. And I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this story. There's a lot to Jagger, and I'm glad I could get it out there. And I will have more videos for you coming next week, so be sure to check back for more. Subscribe, turn on your notifications so you know when I post next. And until next time, thanks again, and I will talk to you all soon.